welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today we're going to be talking about patch management policy. Why are we doing this? What are some of the requirements and lessons learned? So tell me the difference between patch management and patch management policy.
So patch management is where you apply patches to your systems. So for example, Windows or Linux. And then your policy is going to define when these things happen and how you're going to do them. And it's going to be there for everybody to see so they know that this is the policy. Oh, hey, my system is going to get updated or patched once a month. Oh, workstations, they only get updated on the weekends and it's going to be once a month. So people know when these things are going to happen, and then there's a process for that.
So why did you choose patch management? Because last show we were talking about implementing policies and procedures. And, you know, as we did some of the research, we realized, well, we can't do that because we're a two-man show. We don't have Active Directory. So let's say we're trying to implement a password policy that you were talking about last week. How are we going to enforce this when we can use Active Directory to do so? So I know that's the reason why you chose patch management. But why such high priority on this?
So some of the things you're talking about is exactly the process I went through. You know, is this a policy that we can implement for the two of us? Now, your password policy is something that every organization should have. But again, as you pointed out, we don't have the necessary tools to implement that.
Well, we're not an enterprise environment, really.
We're not an enterprise environment, exactly. So we don't have the necessary resources. And when I suggested, well, maybe we need to get ourselves a Windows server. And you're like, well, we can't really do that. We don't have the money to do that. It's too expensive. So there's a lot of things that go into this whole process of deciding what policies and procedures you're going to implement for your organization.
And one of the things that we did decide to do is we can pretend we have an Active Directory thing and go through the process of how would someone configure Active Directory to say, this is how password policy, would be applied, and pretend that we're doing that.
Yeah. And so this is both a learning process for us as well as a safety thing, right? So when we talk about security and what things you can do that are going to get you the biggest wins, right? How are you going to keep your organization safe? In any organization, IT is always busy. So what are some things you can do quickly to keep that organization safe? Like right now, patch management is one of those things you can do. And again, we talked about things like WannaCry and how that got in. It got in because there was a vulnerability in the Windows SMB service. How do you fix that? You patch it. So if you have a patch management policy that defines how you're going to do these things, you're going to make your organization a lot more secure because you know you're going to be doing that.
And also, one of the things that we really wanted to do was to make sure that while we can do the mock policy and mock document, we wanted to make sure that we did one that was hands-on, that you actually had to implement the policy, and, you know, because it is a big part of security. So where did you go to do your research and find out what kind of requirements you needed to meet to be able to implement this?
So I did some research online, and then I remembered that Sans had some policy templates. And as I was going through that, I realized, okay, as we talked about, most of those didn't actually work. So then I said, okay, let me do some research on patch management because we said, okay, that's going to be high priority, big win for us. Mm-hmm. And I found this document that had all of the stuff that we need. It's a patch management policy that was designed for SANS, and it's got all kinds of cool stuff in there. They talk about baselines. They talk about getting approval for certain things. And they talk about server versus workstation, Linux versus Windows. So these are things that are really, really important. And we were hashing this out yesterday. And I told you, read this, see what's in there, and then come up with 4 or 5 questions. And what was interesting is that while I had sort of briefly gone through this document and kind of understood what was going on there, you went through and did something I didn't do. You looked at the details and you asked me some questions that I was like, gee, I'm not entirely sure. I didn't pay attention to that. So remember your Windows question?
Yeah.
Right? You were talking about what is a baseline for Windows updates. How does that work? And what, and you know, and I thought, okay.
Well, yeah, like, do you do it every Tuesday? You know, just like they were.
Well, but you brought up something else too. And we kind of, as we were hashing it out, I think we both came to this conclusion. One of the things you can do in Windows 7, you don't see this in Windows 10, but in Windows 7, you have to pick and choose what updates you get. It gives you options.
Right.
So that's going to be part of your baseline. If you're still running Windows 7, lots of organizations still have that. You may have as part of your baseline for Windows 7, let's say workstations, what options are you going to pick for your updates? Or do you pick all of them? If you're talking about Windows servers, what options are you going to pick? Why do you choose them? How do you know that those are going to be safe for you to install on that particular system? Because one of the things that I was telling you yesterday is that there have been cases where people don't test the patch, they apply it to their Windows servers, and now all their Windows servers don't work anymore. So that's something that we also want to have as part of our policy. Yeah, we're going to have baselines, but we also want some sort of process by which we test some of this stuff or double check to make sure we don't kill ourselves.
You know, one of the things that I really liked about the document, it had a purpose. And the purpose was, you had this, the document described, you know, the global security office requirements for maintaining all your patches, right? So it went from that and it told you the scope, what kind of systems we were going to be including on this, like your Linux and your Microsoft, your workstations, your servers, what kind of, you know, all of that. Then it defined the policy. So you had to sit in there and say, this is how we're going to do it. And this is how we're going to do it for workstations. This is how we're going to do it for servers. But the thing that I really liked was the roles and responsibilities. Who does what and how? And that for me, it was like, okay, I'm a structured kind of girl. I like to be able to be told, this is how we're going to do that. And then after that is, how are you going to keep track of that? How are you monitor that? How are you going to monitor? Monitor that and report it to somebody. And what are the consequences when it's not done? And when it's not done at a level that is like, okay, you know, this was missed, oops. Or, oh my God, this was missed and brought the entire system down. So I like what it does. I like to have something that it says to me, if I do this, this is how much of a return I'm going to get in my system. And I think that I'd be a step ahead of most. And that's one of the things that I really like, because we are so disorganized right now trying to do all these projects that we didn't take the time to do that. But we really need to. And I think that if we do, we're going to be better off. And security-wise is worthwhile to me.
No, and one of the things that I always get as an email is this email from Sans about all the different, you know, security things that have happened throughout the week. And they'll talk about different vulnerabilities that are out there. And if we have a patch management policy, one of the things that I think is going to happen at some point is we're going to look at some of the vulnerabilities that we see out there. And we're going to say, I don't need to worry about that. We patch. I know we're safe.
Right.
That's huge. Again, that's kind of our safety net that gives me that warm and fuzzy feeling that, okay, I don't really have to worry too much about malware because we have a patch management policy. Now, if, for example, something like WannaCry comes out, you want to go back and double check all your systems to make sure you are safe and secure, that the patches have been applied. But if you have a patch management policy, a lot of the things that people talk about are not going to be an issue for you because you patch, and that's going to be the thing that saves you. Things like antivirus is fine, but what happens when antivirus fails? And now we're talking about things like the SMB service within Windows. Well, now you have to patch. That's what saves you. That's where you're going to be protected. Now, the other thing that I think is kind of cool about this, this is what's going to be difficult about implementing this whole process. And we're going to have a whole learning session here, and it may take us months to figure these things out. Patching is one of those things in IT that nobody likes to do. And the reason nobody likes to do it, and you're going to see this in smaller organizations where they don't do it. They may do it on the workstation side, because for like Windows, it automatically does your updates. You're good. But then when you take a look at their servers, if you pull back the curtain on their servers, you're going to see none of them are patched.
And why is that? I mean, I noticed that a lot of people are hesitant to it, but I never really understand why.
The reason why they don't do that is because they're terrified that if they patch the system, they're going to take it offline. Something's going to go wrong and that server is going to go offline. And if you're in a situation where maybe that server is in a remote office someplace, well, that's terrifying. The server goes offline. How do you fix it? Nobody's there to fix it. They don't have IT. It may be important to that office, but because you don't have IT people there to jump in and try to fix that system when it's offline, you decide not to patch. Now, one of the things that we've talked about in the past is virtualization and how in virtualization, you take a snapshot. So if I damage the system, I can take a snapshot, do my updates. Oh, it's damaged. It doesn't work. Revert back to the snapshot. So our cloud servers on DigitalOcean have this feature because they are virtual machines. So before I do any updates to our cloud systems, and before I make any major changes to things like our website, I'll take a snapshot and then I'll make those changes. And there have been cases where I've damaged something and I had to use the snapshot, saved me. So this is what a friend of mine does for his organization. And a lot of people will do this. If you have the money, this is awesome. They use Hyper-V, which is Microsoft's virtualization. So it's different than VMware, which is what we have.
Right.
So they'll have that on a physical server. And then on top of that, in a virtual machine, that's where their main servers go. So their domain controllers virtualized, their file servers virtualized. If there's anything else they need as a separate server, they'll do that as a virtual machine. And that will go into an office. So even if it's a small office with a handful of people, they're going to get virtualization. And here's why. The base operating system running Windows and Hyper-V doesn't have a whole lot on it. It's just Windows with Hyper-V. And they may have some sort of hardened configuration with not a lot running in the background. And the reason why they do that is because when they go to do their updates, there's less of a chance for that system to break. And then the major players in all of this are going to be your domain controller as a VM, your file server as a VM. Snapshot, update, done. Right? So if I want to update the domain controller or the file server that has all the company data sitting on there, if that goes offline, nobody can access their work. So I snapshot, I update, oh, it's broken, go back. So virtualization has changed the way that people do update or patch management. Virtualize everything, and then that way the host operating system doesn't have a lot on there. It's less vulnerable. Maybe you put a firewall in there to prevent somebody from accessing the host operating system or making it more difficult for them to do that. And then the ones that you have in the virtual machines are done a little differently because you want people to have access. And that's something that we need to take a look at to see, okay, can we do something like that here? Again, we are only two, so we have to look at the equipment we currently have. Will it allow us to do that? Can we do something on the Linux side to do virtualization for free and gain the benefit of having a virtual machine that we patch versus a whole entire system that, okay, we patch it and now it's broken. It's a physical system. We don't have snapshots. So there are at least one system on our network that I know of that it's kind of like, yeah, I don't really want to update that. Why? Because I may break something. And that something is not at the moment, not really critical to what we do here, but it does play a role in how our network functions. So when it goes offline, that's going to be an issue. And so having this defined process for maintaining things like that is going to be huge because then we're going to say, oh, we already thought about that. We have documentation to tell us how to update safely. Or we've spent the last couple of months looking at virtualization. We think it's going to be good for us. Let's migrate stuff off of here onto something else. We'll figure out how to do our virtualization. We'll do that. And then we can have this virtual system that we can snapshot and we don't have to worry about damaging anything.
Well, unlike any IT project, sounds so simple, so well planned, and you know something will happen. And you know that we'll just be sitting in there thinking that something that may take, we think is going to take an hour or two, is going to take a couple of days. So, But I'm actually looking forward to it. I know these things are not easy to implement. I know it's a dry subject, but I think it's one of the most important ones that will really give you a lot of return for your buck if you're willing to take the time to do something like this.
It is going to. And one of the things that you were talking about in the past is wanting to get involved more in the you know, day-to-day operations of the local network and the cloud servers.
I need to have the experience for when I apply for a job to be able to say, you know, I patched the servers, I patched the workstations, I kind of, manage the network. I mean, I need to learn it and I need to get practice on it.
Right. And that's where the policy is going to help you, right? If I'm not here, what do? The policy, follow it, right? And part of that policy is going to be creating the procedures. So again, we're going to have to sit down and figure out, okay, especially for Linux, what's the process for that? And once it's defined, you can do it yourself. You don't need me to be there. You follow the process. And part of that process, I think, should be some sort of backout plan, right? What do we do in case this thing goes offline? And so in the case of our one server that we have here on the network, what are some of the services on there that we absolutely have to have? So for example, this particular system that I'm thinking about does DNS for the network. Well, what happens when DNS goes offline? You can't go anywhere. You can't access the internet. You can't access any local systems where you're using the host name. So we need secondary DNS, maybe even a third DNS server on the network somewhere, at least a second one. So these are things that we need to think about. So say, for example, I'm not here. It's time to patch. You're authorized to do so. You do it. The system's offline now because it didn't work the way you expected it to. At least we have another system with DNS on it. At that point, we're going to have a policy in there that says, if for some reason this particular system goes offline, stop what you're doing, put everything on hold, document, and wait, right? Wait for help to come. But we don't have any of that. So now when I say, okay, you should be helping me maintain this, you can't.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing we need to do is inventory of all our devices, figure out how we're going to put this together, and then work on the policy and document it all.
And again, this is one policy. And I'm thinking it's going to take us 2, maybe 3 months to figure out something basic even. When are we going to do these? How are we going to do that? What's the baseline going to look like? So I think one of the things that your homework is going to be is to come up with a baseline for Windows 10 workstations. We don't have workstations. We have a laptop and then we have Surface Pros. So, and then we also talked about things like Secunia.
Right.
So Secunia is going to take a look at all of our applications that we have on there. All our third-party apps that don't get updated by Windows Update. And that's the other thing too. When you're talking about patch management, we've talked about the Linux operating system and the Windows operating system, but what about your third-party applications? How are you going to handle that? So that's something that you need to take into consideration. And you have experience with Secunia. So that's going to be a learning process for me because that was recommended by SANS instructors.
Fine.
You better have Secunia on your systems. It's not for enterprise organizations. It's more for individuals, but...
No, but it's nice when you have your laptop... And all of a sudden is that a third-party app, 2, 3, or 4 of them are, they're not up to par, they're not updated, they're not patched, and all of a sudden the thing pops up and goes, you got this many that you need to, update, and we've updated so many of them, and then what it does, it runs a scan and tells you the percentage of security on your system, like you're 98% secure or what have you. And so, I really like the tool. The only thing that I get concerned about it sometimes. Some of them require that I manually do it instead of having that update automatic from Secunia. So on those, I get really nervous, especially with certain ones. And you did recommend that, hey, uninstall it and then install the newest version and go with that. So maybe that's something that we need to look at and see if that's more feasible than trying to sit in there and go, okay, am I going to the right thing, Because I got spoiled with the Secunia when they just go, they know exactly where to go. They know it's a valid website, for their third-party app, and they just update it automatically and because they have a rating and everything. So, it's nice.
But then again, that's where we talk about the policy and the procedures. You're not sure what to do when Secunia doesn't download and automatically update your application. So that's something that we need to sit down and figure out what's the process for that. And the other thing that I think is really important is that the policy is going to keep both of us on the same page. If you're not there, I will update.
Well, and that's what I was telling you about the roles and responsibilities. There isn't a person like the global security office, the people that are patching certain systems, as well as the accountability when you need to make a change and it needs to be approved. Everybody knows how the system is supposed to be patched, who's doing what, whose responsibilities they are, how they report it, the accountability and everything. And to me, that's very appealing because then it's kind of like the military service. There is a place for everything and everything has its place. So I think that that really will help a lot organizing things and keeping them up to par.
Right. And then we're going to have a record of that. So mm-hmm. we can say, okay, I want to see if my system was updated. I go to the documentation we have, the record of that, and I can say, oh yeah, my system was updated. You know, or I'm going into this particular server. Was it updated? I can check the records. If I want to do a quick audit or a quick check of our systems, I don't have to log into a system to see if it was updated. I just go to the records. And then I can say, okay, oh, hey, this was updated. These were updated. These were updated. Oh, cool. We're done.
Or somebody goes, oh my gosh, WannaCry's coming. And you go, wait, when was my system patched? Was it updated? Oh yeah. You know, so yeah.
So those are things that I think are really going to be helpful to us. And I think we're going to end up in a situation where we're not so worried about systems getting hacked or we get malware. Hacking is not really something I worry too much about, but I do worry about the malware coming in because that's everywhere. You got all this ransomware out there. You get all these different, malware applications that come into your system. And it's so hard, even as somebody who's in IT, you look at some of these things and it's so hard to tell the fake from the real. So even for me, I can't say 100% I wouldn't click on something that I shouldn't be clicking on.
Well, the thing is, I worry about hacking because I worry about it all. I'm a worrywart because my biggest nightmare is here I am in security and I get hacked or I get owned or I get malwared. I don't want to be that IT person. I know that your system is not going to be totally secure. I know there isn't. I mean, if you have it like Fort Knox, production will suffer and nobody could do anything. And I understand that. And there isn't, a totally secure system. But I just don't want to be the one person that missed that little tiny thing that you shouldn't have missed.
And that's true. And that's, we don't want to be those two people that say, hey, here's our podcast. We're all about security. And oh, by the way, we got malware. We got hacked. And here's our website with somebody else's stuff on there because the hackers broke in and changed our website. We don't want to be those people. And having this policy in place is going to really improve our security and make things better for the both of us.
And if this is something that you can use on your enterprise environment, check out the SANS. Are you going to put it on the show notes?
So I'll put it on the show notes.
Yeah.
And I'll also include the actual policy that we have.
Yeah.
And so people can take a look at that so they can see what we're trying to do. But the ones that they have on the SANS website are really, really good.
Yeah.
And you should take a look at those because if your organization doesn't have any policies, some of these might apply to what you're trying to do. And you can use them and modify them and they give you permission to do so.
Yeah. And actually, like I said, they have a really well, written patch management policy. I really liked everything from the purpose to the scope to rules, and responsibilities and all of that. I think is great.
And if you've never written a policy before, when you see these,
it'll help you write it.
You'll be surprised at how much is in there. It's not like a paragraph. It's multiple paragraphs of stuff. I mean, it's a page and a half or something like that of really good stuff. And I would recommend if you've never done a policy before, take a look at some of the ones they have on SANS so you get an idea of what is required to be in a policy. And if you can't figure out how to write your own, like we are not going to do that. We're going to get a template from somebody. Even if it's an old template, we're going to use it. And we can modify that to fit what we want to do. And we're going to have to do that with this one.
Right.
But it's a place to start. And I think we're going to use this and it's going to be good for the both of us.
Yeah. No, it's worthwhile. That's for sure.
Anything else?
No.
So I think that's it. If you want to take a look at our show notes, you can take a look at them at section9.us. And if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.